Ian Willoughby was in New York in September on reporting assignment and interviewed lots of interesting people in the city. Among them was Gail Papp from the Public Theatre, who met Václav Havel there in 1968. She is Ian's guest now in this edition of One on One.
Taking advantage of relative liberalisation at home, the young Václav Havel visited New York in the spring of 1968 for the US premiere of his second major play, The Memorandum. It was staged by the Public Theatre, which just had a huge hit with Hair and was headed by director Joseph Papp. He and his wife Gail Papp got to know Havel at that time and later visited the then dissident at his country home in communist Czechoslovakia. When I visited her at her Manhattan apartment, Gail Papp shared her memories of the relationship that she and her late husband had with Václav Havel.
As far as I know, Joe was the first person to produce his plays, which the first one here was The Memorandum, which Joe also directed. This followed the same season as Hair, which is our opening of the Public Theatre in New York.
And when Havel came in that spring of 1968, how long did he stay here in New York?
You know, I'm not quite sure, but he had some friends who wanted to show him around the place. It was a very lively scene in 1968. It was the height of the hippie movement. We were at the center of it, our building, in the East Village. So they were just all over the place, you know, stoned guitar players and chanters and so forth. So it was very lively and interesting. There were, like, psychedelic poster shops and other kinds of things, every other store in the village at that time. He liked that scene. And there was musical variety then. It was just absolutely incredible. It was wonderful. And he liked that. And he palled around with the famous Czech director, Miloš Forman. They palled around together, and Miloš showed him around the city. And I know that Václav Havel loved that visit. It was relatively free for him, although he was under some duress from his government. But nevertheless, he was allowed to come, and he had a great time.
Well, he must have stood out visually himself, because if it was the hippie days and everything was psychedelic, I've seen photos, and he looked pretty formal still in those times.
Yeah, I think you're right. I remember him dressed in kind of like a pale blue pullover sweater and with slightly tousled hair. He was only 30 years old, and he had a manner that was fascinating to me because he obviously enjoyed everything that was around him, and he had a very warm manner, but it was also extremely courteous. So the warmth and the courtesy were an interesting mixture we're not used to in this country.
Havel didn't really like to speak English in public, but I think he could speak a bit in private. How good was his English in those times?
Well, it was serviceable. You could have a conversation with him. So we got along fine, and Joe immediately struck up a marvelous connection with him.
And could you describe that connection? Why was it that they hit it off so well?
Joe later said it was because we are of the same kind. We were the same kind of person. You'd have to know them both a little bit to understand what that meant. But their lives were commanded by an idea that they were dedicated to. And anything personal came second. It was the idea of their life that they'd created themselves. It was the bond. Of course, they connected in politics. But I think the philosophical and psychological aspect of their connection was the most profound element there.
And do you think your husband grasped that Havel was or would become a great man of the theater?
No, he had no idea. No, he just had no idea whatsoever of that.
And tell us about the actual premiere of The Memorandum here.
Well, it got very fine reviews. It had a wonderful cast. It's a crazy kind of play, just the kind of play that the Public Theater likes to do. And Joe had a great time directing it. So it got what we call here the Obie Award. That's the Off-Broadway Award for the Best Foreign Play of the Year. And unfortunately, Havel had to go back to Prague before he could receive the honor, you know, ceremony we have. So he had to leave his award behind, or I think maybe Joe accepted it for him. So it was gathering dust in Joe's office for many years, always with the idea that he wanted to give it to him. So he'd last have it in his hands, you see. So Havel was always on our mind because his Obie Award was stacked in our office.
And you later delivered it to him. But I'd first like to ask you more about the reception of the play here. How open was the public to that kind of theater? Because it was kind of theater of the absurd, but a few years later.
Oh, I think the public, the people that came to the public theater, they were totally open to it. It's craziness, even though it's kind of set in a East European context, was something that was readily accepted in those days by the people that came to the public. They were the same people that had just barnstormed us to see Hair. So they were a special kind of audience. It was the Broadway audience. It was a different kind. A lot of young people.
Do you know if Havel also went to other plays when he was here? Was he soaking up the theater scene?
I think he did somewhat, but I really don't know what those listed plays were. But he was trying to take in as much as he could, certainly.
You wouldn't know if he ever went to rock concerts or anything, because famously he brought back a Velvet Underground album from here in 68 that people say kind of helped spark the Czech underground scene.
Oh, really?
Would you know anything about that?
No, I didn't hear about that, but I know he's very musical, and he loved the music of that era, as he did the poster art, because he bought a lot of those crazy psychedelic posters and brought them home.
You later visited him at home in the mid-80s, I guess. Could you tell us how that came about?
He had been recently freed from serving his time in jail, and Joe got wind of the fact that he'd been released under house arrest due to his poor health. So Joe figured he could then receive visitors, he hoped. So he got this idea in his office one day. He said to me, "Listen, why don't we take that Obie Award to Václav?" I said, "Yeah, sure. How do you do that?" He said, "Well, I'll call and see if we could arrange a trip there." And somewhat to our amazement, we were allowed to have an official visit with him at his home in the Crokinus Mountains. So we packed, it's a big poster-size framed glass award. So I put it in our luggage, packed our clothes all around it so it wouldn't break. And we went over there, and his brother, Ivan, said he'd meet us at the Prague airport. So we jumped in his car, and he drove us it was about 200 miles, about a two-hour trip, to this beautiful country place that Václav and his then-wife, his late wife, Olga, had.
Well, Havel was famously constantly monitored there by the secret police at Hradeček, his country residence. Were you aware of that?
Oh, God, yes. When we arrived, Václav said, "Wait, before you come in, I want you to just pause on the doorstep here." He said, "You see that hill across from me, from my house?" And we said, "Yes." He said, "Well, you see at the top of the hill, there's a little kind of Swiss chalet?" I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, believe it or not, the police have installed a 24-hour person there to spy on who comes in and out my front door." He said, "Also, this hill used to be covered with beautiful trees and bushes." He said, "They mowed all that down, so his view of my front door would be unobstructed." And then he started laughing. He said, "Could you believe that?" And he said, "Well, look, you'll see, he's right up there with binoculars right now." And sure enough, he was.
At that stage, Havel had been in prison. He was under a lot of pressure for a long time. What state was he in when you met him?
Joe picked up on it. He was incredibly angry, but under control. The absurdities and petty and major cruelties of what he had to go through, they were even worse under the home arrest. They were just invasive and beyond belief. He had to deal with that. He had to live with it. And it had taken its toll, not his sense of humor. He still had that. But he was angry, and he kept that under wraps in some way.
But also it must have been like manna from heaven for him to have visitors like you and your husband.
Of course it was. Yes, that was absolutely an improvement. But he had to go through the embarrassment of the circumstances of his beloved country home being under this kind of surveillance. And it had taken toll on his late wife, Olga. She was very statuesque and beautiful, but very sad, very sad. But he was a resilient person and obviously a deeply philosophical person. Tell from his writings. I don't know what he had in his mind for his future at that point. We didn't really discuss it. He was very sad that it had been so many years since he'd been able to see a play of his with an audience.
Did I read somewhere an interview with you in which you said that some of the psychedelic posters he'd picked up here were there in Hradeček?
Oh, yes, yes. We were shown into the guest room, and there were those psychedelic posters on the walls. And he must have bought those in Greenwich Village when he was there in 1968, because they looked very familiar to us.
And how long was your stay at Hradeček?
We were just there for a weekend, overnight. But it was a very nice visit. And we got to know him a little bit better. He also took us on a tour of his grounds. There's some medieval relics there, old stone works, and he knew the stories behind them all, so that was great.
And was it the case that all through those years, the public theater was still putting on his plays here?
Yes. Yes, we did numbers of plays. The play he just finished at the time we were there in 84 was Largo Desolato. Obviously, he couldn't give a copy of the play to Joe. He'd never get out ask the customs. So he said he'd already gotten it out of the country through whatever means he had. So Joe got a copy of it, had it translated, and we did it at the Public Theater next year, I think.
Was it the case also that your husband invited Havel to New York in the 80s for some kind of artist residency?
Yes, he thought that would be a strategy because he'd heard that if Havel had an accredited offer from the States, say from a college or another kind of organization, for a residency, that he would be allowed to travel out of the country. So Joe made the offer based on that information, and Havel discussed it with him when we were there. He was very grateful for it, but he told Joe the reason he had turned it down while he was still in jail is that there were other people there who didn't have that kind of advantage, and he didn't want to stand out anyway.
And also maybe he wouldn't have been allowed back, I guess.
That's exactly right, yes.
How was it for you and your husband at the end of the 80s watching Havel's extremely fast ascent to the presidency?
Well, it was just wonderful. We were just delighted beyond belief. It just was absolutely thrilling. We had no idea that was going to happen, but we were just joyful, absolutely joyful.
Did your paths ever cross again?
Yes, in a somewhat sad way. In 91, Joe was dying of prostate cancer, and we got word that Havel, who was then in town, was trying to see him and wanted to see him. Well, Joe was, part of the time he was in the hospital, but most of the time he was here at home. So his Czech administrators were trying to find out whether he could go to the hospital or come here, whether it was secure enough. They were doing security checks at both places, and they finally determined it wasn't secure enough. So Havel, I know, was frustrated by that. He wanted to see Joe. He knew he was dying. So what happened is he finally managed to call him. So he called him here at home, and they spoke for a few minutes. Joe was totally surprised. And it meant a great deal to him. And it was about 2 days before he died, so it was a very meaningful conversation and meant a great deal to him. And I admire Havel for such a friendly and compassionate effort that he made to reach Joe. It was wonderful.
Gail Papp, who was speaking to Ian Willoughby.